First Peter chapter 3. Shimon has been writing to the believers and showing them how important it is to honor God in our home relationship. That the home relationship speaks very loudly to the people that are around us. And having spoken about how husbands and wives are to behave, he now comes to talk to us about more general counsels concerning our attitude towards each other as believers, concerning our attitude to mankind at large, and concerning our attitude towards those who persecute us. 1 Peter chapter 3 from verse 8 to verse 12. Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tender-hearted, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Here we see in verse 8, our attitude towards each other. Be of one mind, have compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tender-hearted, be courteous. Not only be so, but appear to be so. The behavior should adorn the attitude. Do you know that's a famous motto? In essentials, unity. In non-essentials, diversity. In all things, charity. So that is the rule. This is our guiding principle. We are to be of one mind. That doesn't mean that you and I agree. It doesn't necessarily mean that you and I see eye to eye with each other on everything. But as far as the good news is concerned, as far as the message of salvation is concerned, we all have the same mind. We all understand it. We all appreciate it. We love it, and we seek to share it. There is such a thing as unity and diversity. That means I may have different ideas about certain things that are minor, but that doesn't prevent me from having fellowship with my fellow believers. We can sink our differences. There are certain things which we cannot compromise on, but other things like the government of the assembly, how should it be? Should it be with one person? Should it be with a number of elders? I take the latter to be true. Or some may argue as to when is Yeshua coming back? Is he coming back before the tribulation, during the tribulation, or after it? One of my friends said, as far as the millennium was concerned, he was a pan-millennialist. He wasn't a pre-millennialist, he wasn't a post-millennialist, he wasn't a millennialist, he was a pan-millennialist. Someone asked him what that meant. He said, everything's going to pan out all right in the end. Well, we're not going to break up with each other over our views on secondary issues, but on the primary issues, we are of one mind. We should all have a look at the statement of faith of this Kehillah. Those who have applied for membership get a statement of faith. They must read it through carefully and say, I wholeheartedly agree with these statements of faith, these declarations of truth. On those things we cannot compromise. So that's what he means by being of one mind. And also having compassion for one another. That means have common feelings. That's literally what the Greek says. Or be sympathetic. Empathetic, sympathetic. having the same mind and outlook towards each other. Love as brethren, or love as brothers here. Love one another as brothers do. We sang together, Hine mato umanaim, shevet achim gam yachad. That means, behold, and how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. And the psalm, which is Psalm 133, goes on to say, there it is that the Lord commanded the blessing. It is where we love each other and where we can tolerate each other's different viewpoints and attitudes and so on. He also says, be tender-hearted. That is, be merciful to those who need it. This feeling will arise out of the love of God in us, tender sympathy with the sufferer, and also more than just a sympathy, action. We take action when we see someone suffering. We want to see what we can do to relieve them. God was speaking to his people in Isaiah chapter 58, and he was telling them the kind of fast that he approved of. In Isaiah 58, he says it's not just meant to be a time when you make a big show of devotion and prayer. Verse 6, he says to his people, is this not the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him, and not hide yourself from your own flesh. Some years ago in Australia, there was a girl called Caroline Jonas. Through a terrible heartbreak, she nearly had a nervous breakdown. And her mother sent her off to some seaside town in Australia to recuperate. It was there that she met a Christian girl who was also staying at the same hotel. And the Christian girl recommended to her a book which she said would help her to cope with her problems. Well, that book was the New Covenant. And at first, Caroline Jonas would not open that book because it had that dreaded name, Jesus, in it. But after a while, she opened it up and she came across those wonderful words, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. And she realized no bad man could have said words like that. She read about him, how he lived and he suffered, what wonderful words he taught, and then how he died. And she thought that was the end of the story. But her Christian friend said, no, you keep on reading. So she did, and she rejoiced to read how he rose again from the dead on the third day. The long and the short of it was that she became a believer. But when she returned home, her family, who had been so careful to look after her, now said to her, you are not our daughter anymore. You can't live in this house. You don't belong to us. There's the door. She was thrown out of her own family. She's not even allowed to pick up her belongings. Well, she remembered the name of a Christian minister, and she went and knocked at his door. And she said, I'm Caroline Jonas. I believe in Jesus, but my family have disowned me. You know what the minister's wife did? She put her arms around Caroline and she said, well, you have lost one mother, but you have gained another. Yes. And they took her in. She became a nurse. And to the rest of her life, she went on speaking about Yeshua. That's what we read about here. See, God says, when you bring to your house the poor who are cast out, when you see the naked, that you cover him and not hide yourself from your own flesh. So she found another mother. And we find that this is what God is speaking about here, to be tender-hearted, especially as he was talking to those who were in the Galut, those who were in exile, those who were far from home, and they were excluded from the synagogues even in their exile. They had been driven out of the temple back in Jerusalem. Now they were in a foreign land, and they were not even allowed to join with the community. There's a strong sense of community amongst our people. And it used to be the custom when one person traveled from one town to the next, he'd always go to the synagogue because he knew there he would get food and shelter and help to carry on his journey. But they were excluded. So the Bible says here, be tender-hearted, take care of each other. If the synagogue doesn't take care of you, you should take care of each other. That's what it means to be tender-hearted. Beware of the example of the unforgiving servant who had no pity on the one that owed him so little when he had been forgiven so much. So sometimes we may find that someone comes to ask us for help, but they're not popular. They don't rate on our top 10 for popularity. They're way down near the bottom. But they happen to be our brother or our sister, and they happen to be in need. And that's the time when we have to use that tender-heartedness. He also says, be courteous. That is, be friendly, obliging, well-mannered. No gross familiarity that breeds contempt. Respecting small things as well as big things. It means to be sociable and to be tactful. And this also flows from the love of God, but never at the expense of the truth. That's where we have to stand our ground. It's very difficult when someone who is our brother or our sister comes to us with something that is not in line with the Word of God. We tend to get very self-righteous. We tend to get very hot under the collar. But we have to control ourselves. We have to remember, this is my brother. Their views are odd. But it's my brother. You can hit that error as hard as you like. You can call it boobamizen if you like. You know old wives' fables? But you must be careful not to get personal. Without injustice to the truth, we can be like that. Remember Abraham, he was always courteous. When he saw three men coming by, he ran to meet them and he bowed to them and he welcomed them for a meal at his tent. Later on, we read in Genesis 23, how the king of the Philistines came to him and he said, you are the blessed of the Lord, make a treaty with us. Abraham said, all right, I'll make a treaty. But first of all, I want you to know that your servants attacked my servants and wouldn't allow us to use the well that we dug. When he got an apology from the king of the Philistines, everything was straightened out. And that was the end of the matter. But you see how polite Abraham was? He waited until he had the opportunity to deal with the matter. He waited for the right time to speak. You find that also in Rav Shaul. When he's writing to the believers in Corinth, in his second letter, he says, remember, I told you I was coming, and I didn't come. Do you think it was because I say yes one minute and no the next? No. I call God for a record on my soul. It was to spare you I did not come. The reason why I delayed was because there were certain things that were wrong, that were not kosher. And I wrote my letter to you with tears, with an aching heart, and then I changed my plans. I decided I'd give you time enough to straighten that thing out in your life. So I delayed my coming. Not because I changed my mind, but to spare you. I didn't want to come when you were still trying to handle this mess and you got a mess everywhere. I wanted you to have time enough to get that thing straightened out. You find the same in the Torah. Our brother Lionel read a few weeks ago about the law of leprosy. When someone came to the priest and said, "I think there's the plague of leprosy in my house," the priest said to the man, "Go home, take everything out of the house first before I come. Because once I come and I declare the house is unclean, everything that's in that house is going to be unclean too. So clear it out before I get there." That was God's provision, so that they would still have their belongings, their furniture, whatever. You see, the same principle is at work when God says, "I'm coming to straighten you out. Now I'll give you time. If you're going to do it, we won't say any more about that matter." Now, has God ever spoken to you like that? God says, "There's this thing wrong in your life. I'm coming to straighten it out if you don't do something about it. But if you do decide you're going to do something about it, God calls it quits. That's it. Okay. Let's forget about it." The Bible puts it like this: when we judge ourselves, we will not be judged. But when God has to do it, He chastens us. See the principle at work all the way through, in the case of Rav Shaul, in the case of the leprosy, in the case of God Himself. Courtesy, giving people an opportunity to straighten out. Then He also speaks about our conduct to mankind at large, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling. I don't think it's common amongst brothers and sisters to do that. It's a negative injunction followed by a positive one, and then the reason given. You notice the pattern here? First of all, don't do this, but do the opposite, and the reason why is given as well. First of all, don't return evil for evil or reviling for reviling. That's negative. But what do you do instead? On the contrary, blessing. And why do we do it? Knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. So when someone insults you, you don't insult them back. There was someone that used to come here that had rather hot temper, and they annoyed a driver. I think of all the tests of our love to God, the steering wheel is one of the severest. How we tend to forget ourselves when we're behind that steering wheel. Someone put it very humorously. They said the most dangerous part in a car is the nut that holds the steering wheel. So we have to be careful. Well, this person lost their temper. It was a believer. And they returned us. They gave as good as they got. And then they heard toot toot, which was a truck driver. The truck driver was going to them like this, waving his finger. You shouldn't have done that. Fancy a believer having to be told off by an unbeliever. Isn't that sad? So let's watch ourselves. Don't return evil for evil. Why not? Well, because God has chosen you to return good for evil. And He means also good for you as a result. You will inherit a blessing when you do that. God says, "It's not for nothing that I tell you to do this. I will reward you every time you do it. I will bless you. Your reward will be out of all proportion to the sacrifice." So the negative injunction followed by the positive one and the reason for it. Don't retaliate. How hard it is. The reason why it's so hard is because of the instinct of self-defense that is in us. That instinct of self-defense arises from really self-protection. It is the way we protect ourselves from danger and from harm, the instinct of self-defense. But sin has come in now, and now we tend to push the pendulum too far. We may indeed have recourse to the law for protection, but not as far as personal revenge is concerned. Proverbs, say not, I will do to him as he has done to me. That's what the proverb says. Proverbs 20 and verse 22. Say not thou, I will do to him as he hath done to me, but wait on the Lord, and he shall save thee. So the Lord will take it up. The Lord will take care of the problem. We had a problem this morning. Someone picketing the entrance and trying to tell people that we were up the creek doctrinally. Well, we asked them to leave. They didn't choose to leave. What option do we have? Well, we ask God, first of all, you take care of the problem. Contrariwise, blessing. That's the positive injunction. And this can only be done with help, the help of God. We don't have the ability. We have to fight with ourselves to do it sometimes. But with the help of God, we do it. And in doing it, we get experience. And the next time, it's not quite so hard to do it again. You are called. We have been called to reward evil with good by word and by deed. That's why he quotes the psalm there. He who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. That's from the Psalms, Psalm 34. It is meant, the blessing is that we become more like Yeshua, our Messiah. We become more like him, who did the same thing. When the thieves cursed him on the cross, he didn't reply. Both of them cursed him. Then one of them had a change of heart. And then he did speak up. And all he spoke was a word of blessing to the one who said to him, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Before that, Yeshua didn't say a word when they insulted him. But now he said, verily I say to you, this day you shall be with me in paradise. So it strips us from all the old ways. And that's the way we get free from it. God says, help me to peel the stuff off. It doesn't belong to you anymore. And we cooperate. And we do win a reward for our labors. We read that the law of the Lord in Psalm 19, the law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing of the heart, rejoicing the heart. He goes on to say, more to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Moreover, by them your servant is warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. What we've been looking at here in the letter to Shimon is not just in the New Covenant, it's in the Torah. It's there that God spoke these words to us. And when he says, not rendering evil for evil, evil, we find it in the Torah. You are not to curse your neighbor in your heart. There it is. Speak the truth in your heart. Don't bear grudge against your neighbor. If you see your enemy's donkey groveling under its load, collapsed under its load, even though it's your enemy, help the donkey up onto its feet again. So it's the Torah. And in keeping of them, there is great reward.